All right. So, David, 2 Samuel. I think Absalom was on his way in. David was on his way out in chapter 15. I think that is where we left off the story. Okay, so David has decided not to mess with Absalom. Okay, again, with the promise of bloodshed and violence in his house from God after the sin with Bathsheba. This is what is occurring, and we're not going to see this end. Okay, so the rest of David's life is going to be filled now with more bloodshed, more violence, more issues, more stuff in his family, and it's going to go from bad to worse. Okay. So 2 Sam 15, verse 13 and following, Absalom is now stolen away the people's hearts. David is leaving the city and decides to, again, not fight his son, which is a wise move. All right. In the verses that follow, we're going to see some people that are loyal to David, some people that are going to abandon ship and answer to Absalom, and we're going to see kind of how that all plays out. So look at verse 18. You're going to meet a guy named Ittai the Gittite. So read about this dude. Ittai the Gittite. It was really bad, by the way. Like, this is the season we were having our third kid, and we were teaching through 2 Samuel and all these names. I'm like, that's awesome. Like, Michelle, can we name our kid Ittai? And she's like, no, 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 no. So, oh, I thought that was a great idea. It would have been unique. 18. I do like Ittai the Gittite. Read about him.
An honest servant. An honest servant cast by him, and all the Gittites, and all the Pelethites, and all the 600 Gittites.
Gittites are people from Gath, by the way. I guess they don't like Gathites. So, Gittites, Goliath, Gath, okay?
To follow him from Gath, pass on before the king. Then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, why do you also go with us? Go back.
All right, so this guy is apparently new to David's clan. He's from Gath, obviously, so he's a foreigner. And David says to him, dude, stay here, okay? You just joined. You don't need to come with me. You know, he knows what's in store with a coup and a rebellion, okay? You only came to me yesterday, and today I make you a wanderer with us while I go where I will. So basically, he says, stay here. 21, Ittai answers. Keep going, Evan.
But Ittai answered the king, as the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, wherever my lord the king shall be, whether for death or for life, there also will your servant.
So, like that. Like, dude, I'm going with you, and if where you're alive, I'm alive, where you're dead, I'm dead, I am going with you. Okay, so just you see a great loyalty from a lot of people to David, okay, and he's commanded that type of respect because of the type of person that he is. He doesn't force this on people, which I like, right? He's not a Saul. He doesn't, you know, cut oxen in pieces and say, come to me or I'll cut you in half. This is the type of leader he is, and people are attracted to him, okay? So Ittai comes with him. By the way, our kid's middle name would have been Gittite, so Ittai Gittite. That would have been awesome. All of you haters. That's why I have a wife who has discernment. Yeah, sorry. You're just stupid, Mike. Don't say those things anymore. Yeah, okay, so Ittai comes with them. They're in Jerusalem, by the way. 23, they cross over the brook Kidron. Where's the Kidron? Anybody know? That should ring some bells in your head. Kidron Valley in Jerusalem. Okay, so if you are in Jerusalem and you cross over the east part of the city, you go through the Kidron Valley up to the Mount of Olives. Okay, and you guys will stand in that and see it. It's really cool. So this is where this scene is occurring. So David is in his palace in the old city, and they are crossing the Kidron Valley. Cello! Yes, we have missed you. What's up, my friend? All right, so they roll over. 24, this is an interesting move. I appreciate David's character in this too. Read 24. All right, so the priests take the Ark of the Covenant with David. This is David's response in 25.
Then the king said to Zadok, carry the Ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and let me see both of it in his dwelling place.
Keep going.
But if he says, I have no pleasure in you, behold, here I am, let him do to me what seems good to him.
That's interesting, right? Take the Ark back. Okay, the Ark belongs in the house. It doesn't belong with me. If God wants Absalom to be king, then so be it. If he wants me to return, then maybe I'll return and I'll get the seed again. But That's, you know, as you've seen the lucky rabbit's foot of the ark in battle, that's a pretty significant deal to say, you know what, take it home. And David wasn't saying he didn't need it, but he's saying, listen, that's, we have a house for that now. It's going to stay in Jerusalem. So appreciate David's attitude. And you just see his willingness to say, you know what, I'm not going to hold on to my kingship at all costs. I'm not going to fight my son. I'm not going to take the ark. I'm not going to do that. And if God finds delight in bringing me back, then God will do it. And if not, then whatever. Okay? So he turns them around. Verse 30, David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went, and his head was covered, and he walked barefoot. So literally, he and his men are leaving like in mourning. Okay? It's this sign of like they're at a funeral, and that's how he leaves. It's a sad sight. Okay? 31, someone told David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. Ahithophel was a guy that we'll read about here in a couple more chapters. His counsel apparently was like from the mouth of God itself. Like when he spoke, it was as good as gold. And we'll find out why he defected here in a little bit. But he's a guy that that would have been pretty painful. Okay, so David prays, O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness. Anybody got a note on that guy in terms of his lineage? I had one somewhere. I'm trying to remember where it is. On who Ahithophel is. Yeah, anything about his lineage. Ahithophel is Bathsheba's grandfather. So when David has this sin with Bathsheba, how do you think Ahithophel felt? So the first chance he has to abandon David, he's like, absolutely. You know, you slept with my granddaughter and killed her husband. See you later. Okay, so Ahithophel is related to Bathsheba in that way, grandfather. Okay. So David leaves, Ahithophel goes back. That's not good for him, okay? David has a plan. 32, he has this guy named Hushai, the Archite, and he says, man, listen, you're on my team, but I need to place you in Absalom's council as basically a spy. Ahithophel is going to give great counsel to Absalom. I need you to give different counsel that seems better, basically, than Ahithophel's, and I need Absalom to listen to you, okay? So when we're going to see this play out. So basically, Hushai is a guy that is a plant. He's a mole in Absalom's kingdom put there by David so that when Ahithophel offers counsel to Absalom, that hopefully he will not listen to that counsel and Absalom will listen to Hushai. Okay, so Hushai is a loyal dude, but David says in verses 32 and following, stay here, you'll be better used for me that way. Okay, so that's kind of the finishing out of that, of chapter 15. Okay, 16 we read about a little bit. This is the Ziba Mephibosheth deal. They're out of town. Okay, Ziba comes up and says, hey, here's all this stuff for you. David says, where's Mephibosheth? Oh, he's in the, you know, he's back home saying, may my father or may Saul's kingdom, you know, come back and the heck with David. See you later. Okay. And then that story kind of moves on. We know how that ends. Okay. In verse 5, we're going to meet another guy. This guy's a chump. Read about this dude in verse 5. Shammai or something like that, yeah.
The son of Gera, and as he came, he cursed continually.
Okay, so he's cursing, not just cursing, he's cursing at David, okay, and all his men as they're leaving. Keep going.
And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left.
So again, these guys are leaving like in a funeral procession, barefoot, covered, and they're sad, they're weeping, and this guy is cursing at them. So you get the picture of like, this guy's a jerk, and he's talking, you know, he's talking about David's mom, he's talking about what a horrible ruler he is, he's talking, you know, I mean, he's punking him. And David's got his mighty men with him, he's got, you know, all these guys, and David's just kind of having to sit there and take this, okay? He says in verse 7, get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow, the Lord has returned upon you the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. So, I mean, he's just, this guy's nasty, and he's just, he's all talk but no action type guy. So he's punking David. And then verse 9, look at what we see step up. Verse 9 about Abishai. Read that.
Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog...
Sorry. Yep.
Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and take off his head.
Can I go cut off his head, David, please? This is the guy that stood in front of... who was Saul's commander? Why am I forgetting it? Abner, and said, let me run him through with the spear right now, David. Like, I only have to hit him once. So that's Abishai.
Is David's exit like this because
he's saying, like, that'd be a possibility? Maybe. He obviously knows he blew it in chapter 11, and that the consequences of that blowing it are some of this. But he also realizes, man, there's no upside in this. If I fight for the throne, I'm going to kill my son, or he's going to kill me. Now we're going to divide Jerusalem. So his heart is, I don't want to kill my son, and his heart is also for the nation. So, like, what's best for the nation right now? Well, what's best is for me to leave, so, and to let God deal with the consequences. So, yeah. Yeah. David will, thankfully. So he's going to be a guy that he sits on the throne and he will breathe his last, sing a swan song to his son Solomon, you know, give his last words and die naturally, okay? But David chooses to go this route. And I think that's obviously the high ground, right? The harder part would have been to, or the easier part would have been to fight for your kingdom, put down your son, okay? And fast forward, we know this coup's going to get put down. David's going to be victorious. Immediately on the heels of this, there's another coup that starts. And David handles that one very differently than this one, okay? So this has a lot to do with the fact that it's Absalom, okay? So they leave. Shimei is offered to be slain by Abishai. David says, you know what? Behold, my son, verse 11, who came out from me, who seeks my life, how much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day. So you see David's attitude is, you know what? Let him curse. You know what? We're not going to deal with them. David continually takes the high ground, okay? So Shimei basically follows them on the hillside in verse 13 and 14 and just curses them their whole way out of town, throws dust, throws rocks, and the people are in the midst of this very, very weary, okay? So this guy's a chump. By the way, you guys remember the beginning of 1 Kings that Brad taught last week, and he handed the throne to Solomon, and he gave Solomon a hit list. And he says, go kill Joab, go kill some other guys. One of the guys on that hit list is Shimei. He says, hey, I promised not to mess with you, but I didn't promise that my son wouldn't mess with you. So Shimei is going to get basically put on house arrest when David comes back, and he decides to leave house arrest. And Solomon says, I told you not to do that. So he's going to die. So be encouraged. So you curse the king, you get dead. All right, so 15 and following now. We've got Absalom on the king, or on the throne, rather. He's become the king. Look at, and let's pick up in 15. So I'm going to start reading there.
Now Absalom and all his people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him.
All right, so they have now taken the throne. They're in control. David's gone. Okay, who's Hushai? He's the spy. He's the plant. Okay, so Absalom was wise enough to go, hold on. Keep going, Mitch.
And Absalom said to Hushai, is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend?
So he knows, listen, dude, really? Like, y'all and David are chummy. Like, why are you with me? Okay? Here's his answer. This is pretty smart.
And Hushai said to Absalom, no, for whom the Lord and his people and all the men of Israel have chosen, his I will be. And again, who should I serve? Not be his son, as I have served your father, so I will serve you.
Okay, so look, I'm about Israel. Okay, I served the king. Now I'm serving the king. My loyalty is to the current king. Serve your dad, now I will serve you. Okay, here's Absalom's response.
Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, give your counsel, what shall we do?
Okay, so, sorry. He basically buys that, okay, so he takes it. Now, this is a big deal. If Hushai doesn't get accepted by Absalom, dude, David is dead meat here in just a second, okay? So now, again, David's leaving town. He's got women and children and whatever with him, barefoot and mourning. He says to Ahithophel, who is the guy whose words are gold, he says, what do we do next, okay? Here is Ahithophel's advice in 21.
Left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you have made yourself a stench to your father, and the hand hands of all who are with you will be strengthened. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel.
Now, what does that remind you of when you hear that? What did God tell David would happen as a result of his sin? Yeah, so here's the consequence of David's sin. What you did was private. We are going to make a show of this publicly. So literally, they put up their Coleman tent on top of the home and bring in the concubines, and Absalom makes a very clear statement about who's the king. Okay, so he goes into David's concubines that he had left there to basically run the palace while he was gone. Okay, so, and here's the little note you get on Ahithophel. The advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one inquired of the word of God. So all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and Absalom. Okay, so now, here's part two of Ahithophel's advice. See if you don't think this is brilliant. This is what he tells Absalom to do now that he slept with all his father's concubines. Does that sound like good advice? People have been traveling all day. They're absolutely exhausted. They don't have food. By the way, the route they're going is through basically the wilderness, okay? So remember, east of Jerusalem is miserable, okay? That's the edge of the Judah wilderness. So as they leave over the Mount of Olives, and then they're heading basically north, trying to get to the fords of the Jordan over by Mahanaim, where Jacob was from. So they're coming up the Jordan, but this is a hard, difficult road to travel. They are exhausted. So Ahithophel says, let's go tonight. Give me 12,000 men. We're going to come on when they're weary. They're all going to freak out. None of them are ready to fight. I'll take David's head, cut it off, bring it back to you with all the people. You're going to get all the people back and David's put down. Okay? That's great advice. Now, if you're David, if that's what happens, you're hosed, because that's exactly the right take on the situation. Okay? Now enter Hushai. Okay? That was the advice given by Ahithophel. Now Absalom turns in verse 5 and says, call Hushai the Archite also. I want to hear what he has to say. Okay? Verse 7, this is his advice. Actually, pick up in verse 6.
And when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom said to him, thus has Ahithophel spoken. Shall we do as he says? If not, you speak. Then Hushai said to Absalom, this time the council said, the council that Ahithophel has given is not good.
Which would be the first ever, right, that he hadn't given good counsel. So this is quite the statement that he's going to make. Keep reading. Does that sound like David? You think David would abandon his people and go hide in caves with his men and just let the people be completely unprotected? No. Like, that's like, but he's playing up the story. He's fierce. He's got mighty men. They're angry like a bear, like a mother bear robbed of their, you know, of her cubs. And David's waiting for you to come tonight. He knows that we're going to come, and he's waiting in ambush for you, you know. So it's like, okay. Verse 10, even the one who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will completely lose heart, for all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant. But I counsel, verse 11, that all of Israel will surely be gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba, in the stance that is by the sea abundantly, that you go personally into battle. So what does he challenge him to do now? Don't just send Ahithophel and 12,000 men. What do you need to do? You need to go into battle, Absalom. So now he's challenging his manhood a little bit, right? Get everybody from the entire north, Dan and Beersheba, gather everybody. You lead them into battle, okay? You go beat your chest. You show them that you're this young, up-and-coming, testosterone-filled man, right? You just see what he's playing to, okay? You go with him. You shall come to him in one of the places where he can be found in verse 12. We will fall upon him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and of the men who are with him, not even one will be left, right? He's basically saying, you're going to be the hero. You're going to have your name in the paper. You're going to be awesome. But he's saying, it's going to take time, basically, to gather men from Dan to Beersheba to come in. So what is he buying for David? Time, right? So that they can rest, they can eat. You guys see the, like, Hushai is brilliant. But he paints this in such a way that he's placating towards the pride of Absalom, okay? So here's 14. Absalom's got a choice to make. Whose advice is he going to listen to? All right, so his counsel basically stands, okay? For the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel in order that the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom, okay? So God uses this moment, and Ahithophel's pretty distraught over this when he finds out that Absalom didn't listen to his command. Look at verse 23, like, this is a bad day, okay? Wow, like, okay, like, you take your word pretty seriously, dude, when people don't listen to you. So he goes home, cleans his house, gets everything in order, signs his papers, and hangs himself, okay? I shouldn't laugh at that, but it's just like, buddy, like, he's pretty distraught, right? Like, man, if I had a quarter for every time people didn't listen to my counsel, but mine isn't that good. But anyway, so he's mad because I think he probably sees through Hushai's lies and goes, dude, it's over, you know. And Absalom doesn't have the years under his belt to recognize that he just got played for a young, testosterone-filled, like, come on, beat your chest, be a man. And he fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. So that's the idea. So, Jeremy, do you have something? And I think he realizes, like, man, God wants to put this down. This guy obviously is a very wise and perceptive guy. So when he sees that this is not going his way, he realizes how it's going to end. So he's able to see the end before it comes, and he says, I'm out. So either way, I'm going to die. This is not going to end real well. Okay? Yeah, it's interesting. David will have a... Well, you see his attitude when he comes back into town, okay? It's surprising, okay? So that's the idea. So basically, 15 and following, Hushai basically grabs a couple guys in verse 16, tells them, hey, this is what Ahithophel said, this is what I said. Go report to David what's going to happen. They're not going to come on you tonight, but they are coming. So he sends word. He sends basically spies. The spies get caught telling David and his men these things. They almost get killed, so it's this crazy situation. They get saved by a woman in verse 20. She throws them in a well, covers the well, and fakes like it's part of the field. The people come in that had basically been reported to that these guys were spies from Absalom's camp and say, where are those dudes that came in to tell David these things? And she's like, they're already gone. And they look for him and can't find him. So anyway, so ultimately, the news gets back to David that he's got a couple day pass before the heat's about to get turned up on him, so he's good, okay? Now, 24, David came to Mahanaim. Okay, that is where, again, east side of the Jordan, where our friend Jacob was, that area, okay? They now cross over, and Absalom crossed over as well, and all the men of Israel. 25, Absalom set Amasa over the army in place of Joab, okay? So Joab used to be, obviously, David's guy, who's with David. Amasa is Joab's nephew, okay? So, crazy deal, but so both Amasa and Joab are David's, I'm sorry, they're cousins. Both these guys are David's nephews, okay? So just remember that. It's crazy, okay? I know, okay? Welcome to having lots of wives. So Joab and Amasa, cousins, both these guys are David's nephews from different mamas, okay? So that's the idea. Sisters of David's, yeah, so there you go, okay? So, that's the new guy in town. So Amasa, just remember his name. He is Absalom's general, okay? So that's the idea there, okay? So now we're going to see this showdown, okay? This is kind of cool, by the way, in verse 27, last part of chapter 17. David came to Mahanaim, Sobi, the son of Nahash from Reba, the son of Ammon, Makur, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. Who was... Where did that town come from? When's the last time we've seen that town, Lodabar? Do you guys remember? There was another dude hiding out in Lo Debar. Mephibosheth, okay? This dude, Makur, the son of Amiel from Lo Debar, has a history of taking care of people while they're in hiding. He brings, in verse 28, bread and raisins and pottery and wheat and barley. He basically gives all these supplies to David and his men. End of verse 29, that people were hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness, and he comes and takes care of them, okay? Possibly because he remembers David's faithfulness to Mephibosheth, and he says, man, you guys are out here, you got nothing, you're in the middle of the wilderness, and he provides for them, okay? So, here we go, chapter 18, here comes the battle. Okay, we knew it was coming, here it is. David numbered, verse 18:1, the people who were with them, set them over the commanders. Verse 2, here are the three guys that are going to go out and lead the charge for David. Joab, Abishai, and our friend Ittai the Gittite. Okay, and notice who else is going to go with them. End of verse 18, what does David say about the battle? Did I say 18? 2. Sorry. Chapter 18, verse 2. Replaying the tapes in my head.
David sent out the army, one third under the command of Joab, one third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the men, I myself will also go out with you.
So what does David say about this battle? I'm going. Why would David think that was so important for him to go to battle? What happened last time he didn't go to battle? Remember that? So where did David learn? A lesson. No bueno. I'm going to battle. Okay, so he says, man, I'm going to step up. But listen what the people say. Keep going, Evan.
The men said, you shall not go out. For if we flee, they will not care about us. If half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, it is better that you send us help from the city.
So, David, listen. Appreciate it. Okay, you're 50 whatever at this point. Thank you for your heart to gum. That is the right response. If half of us die, it's no big deal, right? But if you die, it's game over. Okay, so a lot of us can lay our lives down for you, but if you die, this isn't going to end well. So they say, listen, stay here. And the king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So they said, we want you to stay. Okay. So the king in verse 5 charged Joab, Abishai, Ittai, deal gently for the sake of my young man Absalom. What do you think that means? Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. What is David commanding Joab, Abishai, and Ittai regarding his son? Don't kill him, okay? Deal gently with him. Take him captive, do whatever you need to do. Don't kill him, okay? So this is the last orders he gives to these guys as they go out to battle, okay? They go out to battle. Here's the result of the battle. Verse 7, read that. Okay, so Absalom comes out thumping his chest. He loses 20,000 men in a day. David wins the battle, okay? Verse 9, watch what happens to Absalom.
When Absalom happened to meet the servants of David, Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, and his head caught fast in the oak, and he was suspended between heaven and earth. And while the mule that was under him went on.
That may be one of the funniest pictures in your head in Scripture. Absalom, you guys remember he has the really long hair. It even gave us the weight of his hair. It's like 5 pounds. He's going underneath a tree on his mule. His hair gets caught in the tree. His mule keeps going. And now he's literally hanging from the ground. His hair, and he's stuck. So he's like, how stupid are you? Like, oh my gosh, are you really going into battle? So anyway, so here's Pretty Boy sitting in a tree. And look who shows up, okay? He's hanging in the tree. Certain man saw it. He told Joab, behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak. I'm like, how about that? Okay. Joab says to him in verse 11, read that.
Joab said to the man who told him, what, you saw him? Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have been glad to give you 10 pieces of silver and the belt.
Okay. So Joab says, why didn't you kill him? And the obvious answer is verse 12. So is it pretty clear amongst the army what they're supposed to do with Absalom? Like, this guy didn't even get the directions directly from David. He just overheard it. And he said, dude, I don't care how much money you give me. David said, don't mess with him. He's my son. Don't kill him. Joab says, move over. 13. 14. Read that.
Joab said, I'll not waste time like this with you. And he took 3 javelins in his hand and thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oath.
Whoa. Dude, you're dirty, right? How does Absalom, or how does Joab feel about this coup that Absalom has brought upon David and his kingdom? You deserve to die, dude. I don't care who you are, right? So he has this freaky, weird loyalty to, like, David and the kingdom, and part of it is a very self-driven, like, I want my job back. So he's loyal, but in a way that is completely disobedient to what David wanted. So literally, he just murders his son, who's completely defenseless, right? He could have detained him, he could have whatever, stuck him in a hand. I don't know what they had back then, but like clearly the battle's over. 20,000 men are dying or are dead, and all he has to do is take Absalom back to David, right? And this thing's over. But he says, forget it, I'll kill him, right? And he rebukes the guy for not killing him, okay? So bad deal, okay? Verse 17, this is what they do to him. So they make this public, they throw him in a pit, there you go, everyone flees. That Israel, again, is the group of people that went from the north with Absalom and some even from David's camp. So they flee. It's bad times, okay? Let's see. And then they're going to bring this news back to David, and these two basically guys are going to compete as to who gets to run back to Jerusalem and tell David, okay? So basically, news gets back to David. In 29, he asks when these two servants arrive back from the battle. David is staying at their base on the other side of the Jordan. And he says, is it well, verse 29, with my young man Absalom? And this is the answer he gets. Keep reading in, 31. Okay, so you won the battle. Yay! What's David want to know? I don't care about the battle. How is my son?
Then the king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answered, let the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be as that young man.
Ooh, like he doesn't realize what he just said, right? Like, let them all be like that guy, meaning we just murdered him and they all get murdered. And David has obviously a deep felt sense of pain. Okay, the king was deeply moved, verse 33, went up to the chamber, over to the gate, and wept. And thus he said it as he walked, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I have died instead of you? Oh, Absalom, my son. So he is deeply grieved over this issue. And, you know, at this point, it kind of is what it is. Okay, so bad day for David. Absalom's now been murdered. He's going to get his kingship back, but that's not how he wanted it to happen. The whole reason he left the way he did in the first place is so this wouldn't happen. And Joab is the guy whose hand this is at. Okay, so how's that relationship between David and Joab right now? Not so good, right? So, okay. Clip pick up in 19:1.
It was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard that day. The king is grieving for his son.
Now, if you're Joab, why would that tick you off? So this should be a day of great victory, right, in the eyes of a military general. We just put down the coup. We put down 20,000 of their men. Their king is dead. And instead of a victory, what are they all doing? Crying. Like, really? Like, I don't get my name in the paper now because David's going to weep over his son, okay? Now, there's a part of this that's, you can kind of see this both ways. So Joab is ticked, okay? But he also recognizes something that's really brilliant in the midst of this, okay? David just put down a coup, right? He's got the throne back and he's weeping. How do you think the people that were loyal to David feel about right now? Like, this is a really weird, tense deal, okay? He realizes they're saying, listen, you basically love him more than you love us. And that's what Joab tells him. Read that in verse 5. Read Joab's response to David.
to the king and said, "Today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, by loving those who hate you and by loving those who love you, by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased."
Ouch. I mean, that's stinging. You're loving those who hate you and hate those who love you. We fought a battle for you. We won. We saved the day. And all these people were saved because of our actions. And you hate us. And you're weeping over the guy who started the coup and basically gave you the bird and took your throne. And now you're going to cry for him? Like, buddy, you're about to lose all these people because they laid down their life for you and you're showing them no loyalty in return. So Joab's words are, man, they're spot on. David needs to do something. He's grieving, but he can't reject his people in the process. So he's in a really weird deal. And I think rightly so, Joab recognizes this and says, "David, you need to do something, okay? You can't just sit in here and cry. Like, you know, bring your Kleenex outside with you, but dude, you need to do something, okay?" So verse 7, here's his advice. Stephen, keep going. What?
"Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants, for I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you, and this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now."
Go outside, talk to the people. Dude, if you don't do this, everyone's going to leave, and you're going to lose the 20,000, Absalom and the people that followed him, all the people that were loyal to you, all the people that are trying to come back, you're going to lose everybody, okay? And David recognizes this and says, man, that's solid advice, okay? Chaz, pick up an 8. So they're in a tough spot, okay, because David saved them. They've aligned themselves with Absalom. Now David's back on the king on the throne. It's all happened like this. So what's David's response if he were a lesser man? What would he do to all those people? Yeah, dude, you guys all sided with Absalom, chumps. You know, be gone, right? You can now grind rocks in my garden or something. So it's tense all over, okay? So he comes out, admonishes the people who are... he's got the people that were on his side, the people that left with Absalom. He's got to deal with all this, and it's just a weird scene, and he's got to start leading in this moment and setting kind of a line in the sand as to what he's going to do, okay? So people are freaking out. Verse 11, David sent to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, saying, "Speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the word of all of Israel has come to the king, even to his house?" Meaning, dude, the elders of Judah, the leaders of Judah, won't even acknowledge that David's king, okay? Where's David from? What tribe? Judah. So this is really painful for David when they've aligned themselves with Absalom, and he's like, listen, everyone else has kind of welcomed me back, and you guys are still sitting on the bench, you know, crying over the loss of Absalom. You won't bring me back. And because they're not sure, dude, how are you going to respond? If we now come back to you and say we're on your team, you may say whatever and kill us all. So nobody really knows what to do in this moment, okay? David is now going to step up and lead in a godly way, okay? And here's how he's going to show it. Verse 12, "You are my brothers, you are bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king?" Okay? And here's his demonstration of, I'm going to prove to you that I'm going to bring you back in. Cliff, look at that in verse 13.
"And say to Amasa, the son of are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also if you are not commander of my army from now on in the place of Joab."
Okay, so who's Amasa? Who was he? What was his role last chapter? He was Absalom's general, okay? So he was the old general, and now he says, great, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the enemy general, and now you're going to be my new general. And who's going to get put on the bench? Joab. How do you think Joab feels about that? So you can see this tense deal. Joab gives him great advice, but Joab is, again, he's a loose cannon. You just don't know how he's going to respond, okay? So that's his proof to Judah that, listen, I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to be loyal, okay? So you're okay. So again, you see David's history with Joab. You continue to see Joab make his own decisions, kind of fly off the handle. What does David fail to do at every turn with Joab? There's no punishment. Like, there's no rebuke. He won't step in. You see that with his family. You see that with... He doesn't have that. That's one of, I think, David's fatal flaws is he won't speak into those moments. It's just an odd deal. I don't know why. It kind of feels like that, doesn't it? Like, he so values that relationship, he doesn't want to speak in and do what's right. But that's the tension that... Anybody, like, have a persister harmonizer personality in here or know your deal? It's a really weird combo, okay? Because you have these deep feelings of relational connectivity, and yet your persister says, I've got to do what's right. And it's all fine and good until there's a clash between those two, like this. I love you, but you've wronged me. And the right thing to do is to rebuke you and to do what's right, but that's going to damage our relationship. And it's like this, you know, battle that's going on in your head. And David loses that battle continually. He chooses to save the relationship, or at least what he thinks is going to save the relationship, not deal with the conflict and just kind of hope it all passes over. All the time, Joab is continuing to get worse and worse with his antics because he realizes, dude, I'm untouchable. Like, I can do anything I want to. David's, as long as I'm loyal, as long as I win battles, David's not ever going to rebuke me. Okay, so it's just this, it's a shame. That's one of David's few but serious flaws, and it just causes great pain. Okay, so Joab's on the bench. Okay, and now he's going to deal with some people. Okay, look who shows up in verse 16. Read that.
And Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, from a hurry to come down with the men of Judah.
Okay, who's Shimei? The guy who's cursing David. Okay, so now he comes back. Now, if you're Shimei, what are you thinking? Like, dude, I made a really, really public, very obvious display of I hate you, David, right? And talked about your mom, and right, like, this guy's screwed, okay? So he pops off and comes before David. He brings all these Benjamites with him as if to bring, like, hey, we're all going to be loyal to you. Come on, David. So Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king in end of verse 18 as he was about to cross the Jordan. And the king said, verse 19, let my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong in the day when you basically were losing Jerusalem. Like, please forget all those things that I said. They just slipped out, right? Like, just overlook it, please. 20, your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I've come to you today. So he is confessing. He's doing all that he can, hoping that David's not going to put him to death. Okay, Abishai, surprise, surprise. What do you think he's going to want to do? Read 21. Dude, Abishai, you got to love Abishai. He's just extremely loyal, and he wants to kill everybody. So anybody that wrongs David, they should die, and I want to do it. Okay, that's Abishai. So he's just, I like him. I like the guy. Sorry. So David says, you know what? No, you know what? We're not going to do that. Look at his response in 22. So he's basically saying, listen, God restored my kingship. Do I really want to be that petty and kill a guy because he cursed me? Like, nobody should die today. They were as confused as I was. They don't know whose side to be on. This guy's mad. And you can see David is, man, that took a big man to say, you know what? Yeah, you cursed me, and I have every right and ability to put you down. And he says, verse 23, you shall not die. Okay, we're going to move on. Okay, now David remembers that. He doesn't tell Solomon to kill him. He basically tells him to put him on house arrest. And he says, if he leaves and disobeys you, then kill him. Okay, but he's one of the three guys that he gives a hit list to Solomon to. This guy's on it. So he ticked David off pretty bad. So whatever he said in Hebrew was not for print in our Bible. So it was nasty. Okay, so David was awfully mad. Okay, 24 and following is the story of Mephibosheth. Okay, so we've seen that before. Mephibosheth is in mourning. David comes to him and says, dude, where the heck were you? And he says, dude, I was in the palace. Ziba lied to you. And he says, basically, you can have half the land. And Mephibosheth says, great. I could care less about the land. I want you. Okay, so one of the cooler endings. Okay, There's another guy in verse 31 named Barzillai. Okay, he is basically super old. David invites him into the kingdom and basically says, man, I'm going to send you back home. You can live on welfare because you're old and you were loyal to me. And he says, dude, I'm super old. I don't even want to go back. Just let me die here. But if you'll extend that blessing to my son on the other side of the Jordan, that'd be super. And David says, great. Okay, so David is just being amazingly generous to everybody he's encountering, even after these people were involved, some of them in the coup. So 19 is basically the chapter of David just being gracious. So in the midst of him regaining his kingdom and having the right to put these people down, David says, you know what? We're not going to do that, okay? Now, chapter 20, this guy named Sheba decides, you know what? Absalom did all right. I'm going to have a run at the throne. Let's see how this goes, okay? 20, verse 1. Evan, pick up there.
Now there happened to be a worthless man whose name was Sheba, the son of Bitra, a Benjaminite. And he blew the trumpet and said, we have no portion in David, and we have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel.
Okay, so it's really bad when you're described as a worthless fellow, like right off the bat, okay? I think it's Bickery, by the way. So, I like your pronunciation, though. So, he says, hey, Israel, we have nothing to do. Okay, you're seeing that division between Israel and Judah. I won't make you read the town of Shittim this morning either. So, you're done. You're done reading. I never even saw it. I didn't know that was a dangerous word, but apparently it is. Bickery, we'll go with, okay? He basically calls now all of Israel, all the tribes in the north, all 10 tribes, just Judah and Benjamin are the ones in the south. He leads them astray. He stands up and says, man, I'm going to be the new king. Okay, so they leave. So they, a second time, just after having come to David and saying, hey, we're back with you. Oh, no, we're not. So they're leaving yet again, and they are splitting the kingdom. They make a statement in 20 verse 1. The same statement we're going to see made again underneath Solomon. Okay, Solomon's going to split the kingdom with his son Rehoboam and this other servant Jeroboam. Jeroboam leads the people astray, and they say the exact same thing. What do we have to do with you, Judah? It's literally like these are becoming two separate countries. Okay, the fact that David was able to unite these two as one Israel is pretty significant. Okay, so difficult spot. They leave again. So, verse 2, all the men of Israel withdrew from following David, followed Sheba. So this guy's a chump and leads all the people astray, okay? David comes back to the house in Jerusalem, takes his concubines, puts them basically in solitary confinement, and basically reestablishes himself. Verse 4, he realizes, listen, we can't handle this the same way. This isn't just one of those things that we're going to kind of walk away and give away the throne like we did with Absalom. This guy's different. David has no loyalty to him. He's not his son. He doesn't care. So he says, the king calls to Amasa, who's his new Joab. Okay, remember, Joab's on the bench. Amasa is the new general of his army. He says, call the men of Judah for me within 3 days, and you yourself be present. Meaning, gather the army. In 3 days, we're going to battle. Okay, we're going to go put this coup down right now. Okay? Verse 5, problem is Amasa is a young dude, okay? He doesn't have a whole lot of experience in battle, and something happens. Read that. Not you, Evan.
So Amasa went to call out the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which he had appointed. Him.
So for whatever reason, Amasa can't gather the troops. He's got 3 days to do it, and he doesn't. So probably youthful and experienced. So David now turns to Abishai, okay, who is part of the 30 mighty men, like his secret force of ninjas, okay? And he says to him, dude, here's what we're going to do. You get your boys, and we're going to go, okay? So Abishai and Joab is a part of that group. In verse 7, they go out, and they're going to go wreak havoc on Sheba. And Sheba basically walls himself up in the city, and they're going to go after him. So he doesn't get the whole army, but he gets the guys that he wants, okay? They come into Gibeon, and now Amasa is going to have a conversation with Joab, and this is going to sound eerily familiar, okay? Pick up in verse 8.
When they were at the large stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Now Joab was dressed in his military attire, and over it was a belt with a sword in its sheath fastened at his waist. And as he went forward, it fell out. Joab said to Amasa, is it well with you, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him.
Okay, so Joab is in his full military attire. He basically bends over and his sword falls out, okay, as he's meeting with Amasa, okay? Last time Joab met one-on-one with an enemy general, do you guys remember how that story ended? He and Abner in the side, right? Kill you right now. Abner had said, I'm going to be loyal to you. This is way back in however many chapters ago in 1 Samuel, and Joab kills the guy on the spot because he used to be Saul's general, and Joab says, I'm not having any of that, you're dead, okay? So he bends over for whatever reason. Joab's sword falls out. Amasa was not on guard against the sword which was in Joab's hand. He didn't realize it had fallen out. Apparently, he had picked it back up. He goes to hug him, grabs him by the beard, and right in the side. Okay, so typical Joab. He struck him in the belly with it, and it poured out the inward parts on the ground. He did not strike him again, and he died. Then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Okay, so they kill Amasa on the spot. So Joab is like, he's just ruthless, right? No, you don't change teams. You don't get to change sides. You were with Absalom. You don't get to be with David. You're dead. Okay, so he kills him. Now, think of Joab what you want, but there's probably not a whole lot of guys in the Bible that are more fiercely loyal to a fault than Joab. He is on David's team, period. So you can just tell that this is a guy that if he got asked to change teams, like, dude, just chop off all my fingers first, but I'm not changing sides, so. That was Abner. No, Joab's always been on David's team. Yeah. Yeah. So he's, this is David's nephew. So he's got a loyalty to him because he's family. Okay. So basically, the people freak out. Like, he guts this guy, and leaves him sitting there. And he's like, all right, guys, let's go to battle. And everybody's like, oh my gosh. Like, and they're like, okay, throw a sheet over him or something. So he has to cover him. The people now are like, okay. So they go. And they start in verse 15. They find the city that Sheba, this guy that's trying to lead this rebellion in 20 verse 1, he goes walls himself up in the city, okay? Joab and his men, end of verse 15, start wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall. So they're like, you're inside the city? That city has walls? We'll rip down the walls, okay? So, and that's pretty significant. Like, once you guys go and we see the walls in these fortified cities, like, they're just like, great, we'll rip down the whole city, which is quite a feat, okay? This woman in verse 16 at the top of the wall yells down to Joab in verse 16 and says, hey, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you here? And Joab's response is basically, look, I'm looking for Sheba. I'm going to rip down your whole city. So that's why I'm here. And she's like, man, I got a better idea. Okay, so how about we solve this? There's an easier way to do this. Okay. 21, Joab says, listen, I'll relent. I just need Sheba. I don't want to kill everybody here, but I will if I don't get Sheba. So he says in verse 21, only hand him over and I will depart from your city. And the woman said to Joab, behold, his head will be thrown over the wall. Oh, that's all you want? Okay, well, we'll just go chop off his head and we'll lob it to you. Okay? And sure enough, 22, read that. Can you imagine? Is this the one you want? Is that okay? Good. You're gonna be going now, right? Okay. So just chop it off and on with the day. And Joab's like, oh, we're good, thanks. Put it in my sack here and got my Walmart bag, and we'll just take it back to David. And hey, we're good. Hey, here's his head. Coup put down. I mean, he's just very matter of fact and business like. Just toss his head over. We're gonna go eat a bite of lunch, and then yeah, when you're done, just toss it over. Okay. Excellent. That's Joab, right? This guy has. He hasn't met a feeling his whole life. This guy is just hard. So there you go. Okay, so second coup put down. Again, handled very different than Absalom. Okay, and David's right. He realizes, man, if this thing goes on, the kingdom's going to split. So he's got to deal with this now. So this thing doesn't take but a couple days to put down. And Sheba, this worthless guy to begin with, gets beheaded. So good for you. No, he's there. In 21, we're about to see a significant rebuke by God. God, it seems to be, is pleased with what David's doing and the way he's handled himself. The focus is on these battles for whatever reason, but you get the impression that David is walking with God this whole time based on what we're going to see moving forward, okay? And here's evidence of that. 21:1, there's a famine in the land, okay? For 3 years, okay? David recognizes this is from the Lord for whatever reason. So he prays to God and says, hey, why is there this famine, okay? Read end of verse 1, and we'll find out why God has brought a famine upon these people.
The Lord said, there is blood guilt on Saul and on his house, because he put the Gibeonites to death.
Interesting. Okay, so God is bringing a famine on David for something that Saul did years ago to the Gibeonites. Okay, now, way back when we were in 1 Samuel, you guys remember the Gibeonites? Those were the guys that faked like they were from a really, really far land. They dressed in all that garb and said, hey, we're from really far away. Like, make a covenant with us, and we want to be your friends. And they make a covenant with the Gibeonites, Joshua does. And then they realize, like, a day later, oh, wait, you guys are actually our neighbors, and you dirty liars, you lied to us, but we already promised that we can't kill you. Crud, what do we do now? Okay, now you're going to be our servants. Well, Saul went ahead and just killed them all. So he's like, forget, that was under Joshua. I don't care. Kill them. And God says, whoa, no. You made a promise. You don't get to back out of that promise, even though you're not the one that made it. Joshua promised them safety, and they are now going to be hewers of wood in the temple of the tabernacle at the time. You can't kill them. Saul killed them. So David is now getting the basically the recourse of Saul's decision, and there's a famine in the land as a result of that. So kind of weird, but that's how God's timing works, okay? So he says, all right, well, we need to figure this out. David said to the Gibeonites, verse 3, man, what should I do for you? Like, we need to make this famine end. God's punishing my people. What do you want me to do? Okay? And they say in verse 4, look, we don't need money. That's not at all what we're interested in. And David says, great, what do you want? Verse 5, this is what they asked for. Okay, they're speaking of Saul. Okay, so Saul wanted us all dead. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Keep going.
Let seven of his sons be given to us so that we may hang them before the Lord at Gibeah of Saul, the chosen of the Lord. And the king said, I will give them.
Okay, so what do they want?
They want to get his legacy.
Yep, so they want to kill Saul's sons. Now, sons obviously means not just sons, but what else? Okay. Daughters and anyone from his lineage, which means, who is now in the line of fire? Mephibosheth. Oh, doo-doo. So David's got a tough decision to make. I've got to give up seven of Saul's direct descendants, sons, daughters, or otherwise, grandsons, whoever's surviving. Like, we just keep going down the line, and you're going to die. Okay, so if there was any hint that Mephibosheth's plea when David comes back into town after Absalom had rebelled, that wasn't genuine, and he had basically lied just to get the land back, David now has the opportunity to say, dude, blood's not on my hands. You abandoned me. You're going to get killed. Let's watch what David does, okay? 7, pick up there.
The king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Saul's son Jonathan, because of the oath of the Lord that was between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul.
I mean, think about it. How long ago was that oath at this point? David's in his, man, I don't even know at this point, in his 60s? Maybe older than that at this point. He's about to die. And he still remembers that covenant, still remembers Mephibosheth's faithfulness to him, and his heart felt like, no, I love you, and he says, great. So the king took the sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, and 8, and following, you get all the people that basically David has to hand over. How awful is that, like, as a king to say, yeah, I need you today. Why? Well, you're just going to go hang out with the Gibeonites for a little bit. Like, well, what are we going to do over there? It's a party, and you're the favorite. So, bad day, right? So, they, verse 10, yeah, my bad. So, okay, they all die. They get hung, verse 10, let's see. Seven of them fell together, verse 9, and they were put to death the first days of the harvest. Okay, so the Gibeonites get the revenge, God ends the famine, all of them die. It's a rough deal. Okay, at this point, David goes back to Jabesh-Gilead, which is on the other side of the Jordan, picks up the bones of Saul and Jonathan and brings them back, and now buries them in Benjamin, the rightful land, in Saul's dad's cave. Okay? Saul was the son of Kish. He gets buried there. Okay, and God was moved, end of verse 14, by prayer for the land. Okay, so again, you see the spiritual temperature right now in the land is good. The people are praying. David is leading well. And God now basically relents and says, okay, all right. 15 and following, here's the problem with David's sin in 11. We're still getting the consequences of that. Read 15.
When David was told that Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done, David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of his son Jonathan from the men of Jabesh.
Are you in 15?
No.
Nope. 12 is good too, but read 15.
There was war again between the Philistines and Israel, and David went down together with his servants and fought against the Philistines. And David grew weary.
Now, he's old at this point, and he's still fighting, so he's learned a really good lesson, okay? But this is a problem. David gets overpowered, okay, by Ishbanab, whoever this guy is, in 16, who's descendant of the giant. So he's related to Goliath in some way. And Abishai has to come out and basically save David's bacon, okay? And he says, you know what, buddy? Let's let this be your last battle, okay? No mas. Love you, mean it, but you need to go home. You shall not go out again with battle to us that that you may not extinguish the lamp of Israel. So listen, your battle days are done, okay? This isn't because you're lazy. This is because you're old. So go home. He about gets killed by another giant in the land, and Abishai has to step in and save him, okay? So David is now done basically with battle. There continues for the rest of David's day to be bloodshed and fighting with the Philistines, and you get an 18 and following list of wars and people that they have to fight, and that's how David's basically lineage ends, okay? Chapter 22 is the Song of David. He sings this amazing psalm. It's basically identical to Psalm 18, so it's recorded there as well. We won't read through it, but you guys can glance at it later. But it's, man, here's David's heart. This is the sweet psalmist of Israel, as he's described when he dies, and you see his heart come through as a king. Right. Yeah. 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 Abishai is the guy that you wish Joab would have been, right? He's fiercely loyal, but obedient, right? And he just, when David says no, he says, okay, like I can, there's boundaries, and I get boundaries, okay? Joab, not so much, okay? So he is fiercely loyal to David, similar to like a Jonathan guy type figure in Scripture, okay? So 22 is that story. 23, here we go. Last words of Jesse, the son of Jesse, sorry. Notice how David is described, okay? This is just really cool. Pick up there in verse 1.
Now these are the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, declares, the man who was raised on high declares, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel.
Isn't that cool? Like, he's a king, he's a warrior, but he's remembered as the sweet psalmist of Israel, okay? The Spirit of the Lord spoke to me. His tongue was on his word was on my tongue. He spoke the words of God. End of verse 3, who rules in the fear of God. This is what made David a great king. Okay, understands in verse 5 the everlasting covenant that God had made with him. Just powerful. Okay, so this is the beginning of kind of David's last words. We're going to see him speak officially his last words to Solomon here in 1 Kings. But David is on. Man, he's got one foot in the grave at this point, okay? 23, guys, every one of you need to read in detail, verses 8 and following, okay, all the way to end of 39. We'll look at a couple of them. But these are David's mighty men, okay? These are their deeds, okay? So you want a chapter of, like, what did the ninjas do? This is what the ninjas done did, okay? They are awesome, okay? Let's see. Verse 8, okay, I won't punish you guys with having to read these names, okay, but these are David's mighty men. The first three that are mentioned are like his closest three, Josheb Bashabeth, the Techumite, was one of the captains, okay, he was called Adino the Eznite because of 800 slain by him at one time, okay, one dude, verse 800, he wins, okay, bad, he's awesome, okay. Verse 9, one of the three mighty men with David they defiled the Philistines who gathered there at the battle, and the men of Israel had withdrawn. So they're fighting. Israel withdraws. It's this dude in verse 9. He arose and struck down the Philistines until his hand was weary and clung to the sword. Like he killed so many guys, he could barely hang on to the sword anymore. Okay, the Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned only after to slip the slain. Meaning he had killed everybody, and then the people come back to take all the stuff off the dead bodies. Okay, so this guy is faithful and awesome, okay? Look at this guy in verse 11. He's cool. Read that.
Now after him was Shema, the son of Isaac the Heritite, and the gathered into a troop where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines. But he took his hand in the midst of the plot, defended it, and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great victory.
Right, a plot of lentils. Like, there's your battlefield, buddy. Small stage, but a big stance. This guy fights off the Philistines, and God is honored that day. Okay, and he's... Man, this is what we hear about him at the end of it all. He gets two verses, right? And yet he was faithful where God called him, and he makes a great stand, okay? 15 and following, David, when he was fleeing from Saul way back when at the beginning of his flight, basically says, man, I would love to have a drink from the well of Bethlehem. Three guys in verse 16 break through the Philistine camp, draw water from the well of Bethlehem, bring it back to David to demonstrate their fierce loyalty to them. Literally bring a glass of water to David from way the heck away in Bethlehem and have to fight through the Philistines to do it. They give it to David, and David dumps it out. Like, wow. And this is why. He says, nevertheless, he would not drink it, but he poured it out to the Lord, and he said, far be it from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore, he would not drink it. These things the three mighty men did. So he basically pours it out as like a drink offering to these guys and says, you laid your lives down for me. We're going to offer that up to God. Okay, so these guys, again, the loyalty that David attracts to himself is phenomenal. Okay, 18, Abishai, okay, swung his spear against 300 and killed them, and he had a name as well as the three. Okay, so Abishai, the same guy that we know, 300 verse 1, he takes them down. Okay, one of my favorite guys ever, Benaiah in verse 20. Read about this guy. He's awesome.
And Benaiah, the son of
Jehoiada. Right? A lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. Hard task, hard place, hard time. Man, it's just kind of one of those obscure things. I like that about Benaiah. He kills a lion in a pit on a snowy day. You know, difficult foe, difficult time, difficult, you know, weather, and he gets it done. Okay? So, he killed an Egyptian, verse 21, an impressive man. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand. Tell me if this doesn't remind you of a movie, for those of you guys that are old enough to remember it. He killed an Egyptian. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but he went down to him with a club. He snatched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. It's like Gladiator. It's like Tombstone. Guy grabs Wyatt Earp, grabs the gun out of the guy's holster and smacks him across the face with his own gun. He's like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do now? He just grabs the guy's spear out of his hand. You got a spear, I got a club. Okay, I'm going to lose this battle. Well, I'll just take your spear, run you through, and now what are you going to do? So David's just got some awesome guys around him, fiercely loyal. The heartbreaker is verse 39. Look who's mentioned there.
Uriah the Hittite, 37.
All right, so there you go. The last mighty men mentioned, Uriah, who David had murdered. Okay. It's a good place for an awe. Okay. We will stop there for today. All right, and we will keep it up in... the last chapter of 2 Samuel, and then we will be in 1 Kings next week. All right? So, 1 King, then 2 King. Okay? So, you guys have a great weekend. We will see you later on.